Chapter 34. Let me have it at once. Always bring it to me at once. Are there any handsome ones this time? They are much the same class of female as usual, I think, my lord, said Tipman, fetching the paper and laying it before him. Yes, they are, said the Viscount, leaning back and scrutinizing the faces of the women one by one, and talking softly to himself in a way that had grown upon him as his age increased. Yet they are very well. That one with her shoulder turned is pure and charming, the brown-haired one will pass. All very harmless and innocent, but without character, no soul, or inspiration, or eloquence of eye. What an eye was hers! There is not a girl among them so beautiful. Tipman, come and take it away. I don't think I will subscribe to these papers any longer. How long have I subscribed? Never mind, I take no interest in these things, and I suppose I must give them up. What white article is that I see on the floor yonder? I can see nothing, my lord. Yes, yes, you can. At the other end of the room. It is a white handkerchief. Bring it to me. I beg pardon, my lord, but I cannot see any white handkerchief. Whereabouts does your lordship mean? There in the corner. If it is not a handkerchief, what is it? Walk along till you come to it, that is it. Now a little further, now your foot is against it. Oh, that it is not anything. It is the light reflected against the skirting, so that it looks like a white patch of something, that is all. H-MHM. My eyes, how weak they are. I am getting old, that's what it is. I am an old man. Oh no, my lord. Yes, an old man. Well, we shall all be old someday, and so will your lordship, I suppose, but as yet I tell you I am an old man. Yes, my lord, I did not mean to contradict. An old man in one sense, old in a young man's sense, but not in a House of Parliament or historical sense. A little oldish, I meant that, my lord. I may be an old man in one sense or in another sense in your mind, but let me tell you there are men older than I. Yes, so there are, my lord. People may call me what they please, and you may be impertinent enough to repeat to me what they say, but let me tell you I am not a very old man after all. I am not an old man. Old in knowledge of the world, I meant, my lord, not in years. Well, yes. Experience, of course, I cannot be without. And I like what is beautiful. Tipman, you must go to Nulcia. Don't send, but go yourself, as I wish nobody else to be concerned in this. Go to Nulcia, and find out when the steamboat for Cherbourg starts. And when you have done that, I shall want you to send Taylor to me. I wish Captain Strong to bring the Fawn round into Nulcia Bay. Next week I may want you to go to Cherbourg in the yacht with me, if the channel is pretty calm, and then perhaps to Rouen and Paris. But I will speak of that tomorrow. Very good, my lord. Meanwhile I recommend that you and Mrs. Menlo repeat nothing you may have heard concerning the lady you just now spoke of. Here is a slight present for Mrs. Menlo, and accept this for yourself. He handed money. Your lordship may be sure we will not, the valet replied. 33. The English Channel, Normandy. On Monday morning the little steamer Speedwell made her appearance round the promontory by Nulcia Bay, to take in passengers for the transit to Cherbourg. Breezes the freshest, that could blow without verging on keenness, flew over the quivering deeps and shallows, and the sunbeams pierced every detail of barrow, path, and rabbit run upon the lofty convexity of down and waste which shut in Nulcia from the world to the west. They left the pier at 8 o'clock, taking at first a short easterly course, to avoid a sinister ledge of limestones jutting from the water like crocodile's teeth, which first obtained notoriety in English history through being the spot whereon a formidable Danish fleet went to pieces 1,000 years ago. At the moment that the Speedwell turned to enter upon the direct course, a schooner yacht, whose sheets gleamed like bridal satin, loosed from a remoter part of the bay. Continuing to bear off, she cut across the steamer's wake, and took a course almost due southerly, which was precisely that of the Speedwell. The wind was very favorable for the yacht, blowing a few points from north in a steady pressure on her quarter, and, having been built with every modern appliance that shipwrights could offer, the schooner found no difficulty in getting abreast, and even ahead, of the steamer, as soon as she had escaped the shelter of the hills. The more or less parallel courses of the vessels continued for some time without causing any remark among the people on board the Speedwell. At length one noticed the fact, and another, and then it became the general topic of conversation in the group upon the bridge, where Ethelberta, her hair getting frizzed, and her cheeks carnationed by the wind, sat upon a camp stool looking towards the prow. "She is bound for Guernsey," apostrophe said one. "In half an hour she will put about for a more westerly course, you'll see." Apostrophe apostrophe, "She is not for Guernsey or anywhere that way," apostrophe said an acquaintance, looking through his glass. "If she is out for anything more than a morning cruise, she is bound for our port. I should not wonder if she is crossing to get stocked, as most of them do, to save the duty on her wine and provisions." Apostrophe apostrophe, "Do you know whose yacht it is?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "I do not." Apostrophe apostrophe, Ethelberta looked at the light-leaning figure of the pretty schooner, which seemed to skate along upon her bilge and make white shavings of all the sea that touched her. She at first imagined that this might be the yacht they had arrived in at the end of the previous week, for she knew that he came as one of a yachting party, unless he had noticed no other boat of that sort in the bay since his arrival. But as all his party had gone ashore, and not yet returned, she was surprised to see the supposed vessel here. To add to her perplexity, she could not be positive, now that it came to a real nautical query, whether the craft of Ney's friends had one master too, for she had caught but a fragmentary view of the topsail over the apple trees. "Is that the yacht which has been lying at Nulcia for the last few days?" Apostrophe apostrophe, she inquired of the master of the Speedwell, as soon as she had an opportunity. The master warmed beneath his copper-colored rind. "Oh no, miss, that one you saw was a cutter, a smaller boat altogether," apostrophe he replied. "Built on the sliding keel principle, you understand, miss, and red below her water line, if you noticed. This is Lord Mountclear's yacht, the Fawn. You might have seen her reaching in round old Harry Rock this morning afore we started." Apostrophe apostrophe, "Lord Mountclear's?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "Yes, a nobleman of this neighborhood. But he don't do so much at yachting as he used to in his younger days. I believe he's aboard this morning, however." Apostrophe apostrophe, Ethelberta now became more absorbed than ever in their ocean comrade, and watched its motions continually. The schooner was considerably in advance of them by this time, and seemed to be getting by degrees out of their course. She wondered if Lord Mountclear could be really going to Cherbourg. If so, why had he said nothing about the trip to her when she spoke of her own approaching voyage thither? The yacht changed its character in her eyes. Losing the indefinite interest of the unknown, it acquired the charm of a riddle on motives, of which the alternatives were, had Lord Mountclear's journey anything to do with her own, or had it not? Common probability pointed to the latter supposition, but the time of starting, the course of the yacht, and recollections of Lord Mountclear's homage, suggested the more extraordinary possibility. She went across to Cornelia. "The man who handed us on board, didn't I see him speaking to you this morning?" Apostrophe apostrophe, she said. "Oh yes," apostrophe said Cornelia. He asked if my mistress was the popular Mrs. Peter Wynn? And you told him, I suppose? Apostrophe apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe apostrophe, what made you do that, Cornelia? Apostrophe apostrophe, I thought I might. I couldn't help it. When I went through the toll gate, such a gentlemanly looking man asked me if he should help me to carry the things to the end of the pier, and as we went on together he said he supposed me to be Mrs. Peter Wynn's maid. I said, yes. The two men met afterwards, so there would have been no good in my denying it to one of them. Apostrophe apostrophe, who was this gentlemanly person? Apostrophe apostrophe, I asked the other man that, and he told me one of Lord Mountclair's upper servants. I knew then there was no harm in having been civil to him. He is well-mannered, and talks splendid language. Apostrophe, that yacht you see on our right hand is Lord Mountclair's property. If I do not mistake, we shall have her closer by and by, and you may meet your gentlemanly friend again. Be careful how you talk to him. Apostrophe apostrophe, Ethelberta sat down, thought of the meeting at Corvesgate Castle, of the dinner party at Mr. Duncastle's, of the strange position as he had there been in, and then of her father. She suddenly reproached herself for thoughtlessness, for in her pocket lay a letter from him, which as he had taken from the postman, that morning at the moment of coming from the door, and in the hurry of embarking had forgotten ever since. Opening it quickly, she read, "My dear Ethelberta, your letter reached me yesterday, and I called round at Exonbury Crescent in the afternoon, as you wished. Everything is going on right there, and you have no occasion to be anxious about them. I do not leave town for another week or two, and by the time I am gone Sol and Dan will have returned from Paris, if your mother and Gwendoline want any help, so that you need not hurry back on their account. I have something else to tell you, which is not quite so satisfactory, and it is this that makes me write at once, but do not be alarmed. It began in this way. A few nights after the dinner party here I was determined to find out if there was any truth in what you had been told about that boy, and having seen Menlove go out as usual after dark, I followed her. Sure enough, when as he had got into the park, up came Master Joe, smoking a cigar. As soon as they had met I went towards them, and Menlove, seeing somebody draw nigh, began to edge off, when the blockhead said, "Never mind, my love, it is only the old man." Being very provoked with both of them, though she was really the most to blame, I gave him some smart cuts across the shoulders with my cane, and told him to go home, which he did with a flea in his ear, the rascal. I believe I have cured his courting tricks for some little time. Well, Menlove then walked by me, quite cool, as if she were merely a lady passing by chance at the time, which provoked me still more, knowing the whole truth of it, and I could not help turning upon her and saying, "You, madam, ought to be served the same way." She replied in very haughty words, and I walked away, saying that I had something better to do than argue with a woman of her character at that hour of the evening. This so set her up, that she followed me home, marched into my pantry, and told me that, if I had been more careful about my manners in calling her a bad character, it might have been better both for me, and my stuck-up daughter a daw in eagle's plumes and so on. Now it seems, that she must have coaxed something out of Joey about you, for what lad in the world could be a match for a woman of her experience and arts? I hope she will do you no serious damage, but I tell you the whole state of affairs exactly as they are, that you may form your own opinions. After all, there is no real disgrace, for none of us have ever done wrong, but have worked honestly for a living. However, I will let you know, if anything serious really happens. Apostrophe apostrophe, this was all that her father said on the matter, the letter concluding with messages to the children and directions from their mother with regard to their clothes. Ethelberta felt very distinctly that she was in a strait, the old impression that, unless her position were secured soon, it never would be secured, returned with great force. A doubt whether it was worth securing would have been very strong ere this, Had not others besides herself been concerned in her fortunes? She looked up from her letter, and beheld the pertinacious yacht. It led her up to a conviction that there lay a means and an opportunity. Nothing further of importance occurred in crossing. Ethelberta's head ached after a while, and Cornelia's healthy cheeks of red were found to have diminished their color to the size of a wafer, and the quality of a stain. The Speedwell entered the breakwater at Cherbourg, to find the schooner already in the roadstead. And by the time the steamer was brought up, Ethelberta could see the men on board the yacht clewing up, and making things snug in a way from which she inferred that they were not going to leave the harbor again that day. With the aspect of a fair galleon that could easily outmaneuver her persevering buccaneer, Ethelberta passed alongside. Could it be possible that Lord Mountclere had on her account fixed this day for his visit across the channel? Well, I would rather be haunted by him than by Mr. Ney, she said, and began laying her plan so as to guard against inconvenient surprises. The next morning Ethelberta was at the railway station, taking tickets for herself and Cornelia, when she saw an old yet sly and somewhat merry-faced Englishman a little way off. He was attended by a younger man, who appeared to be his valet. I will exchange one of these tickets, she said to the clerk, and having done so, she went to Cornelia to inform her that it would after all be advisable for them to travel separate, adding, Lord Mountclere is in the station, and I think he is going on by our train. Remember, you are my maid again now. Is not that the gentlemanly man who assisted you yesterday? She signified the valet as she spoke. It is, said Cornelia. When the passengers were taking their seats, and Ethelberta was thinking whether she might not after all enter a second class with Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.